So, rumor has it, Brangelina are going to be starring in an upcoming film adaptation of Atlas Shrugged, the blockbuster penned in 1957 by Ayn Rand. Or maybe just Angelina. Brad may be starring in a remake of Rand's The Fountainhead. Whatever, banker John A. Allison suggested this week on NPR that Atlas Shrugged should be required reading.
My favorite book is Atlas Shrugged, which is the best defense, I believe, of capitalism ever written.
And so the charitable arm of the bank he heads, the very large BB&T, has been offering generous grants to colleges and universities that agree to teach Atlas Shrugged. Since 2005, it's given several million dollars to a couple dozen institutes of higher learning for the study of Rand's philosophy called objectivism. Some academics don't like the conflict of interest this arrangement represents, but objectivists say it's perfectly reasonable. It certainly wouldn't have bothered Rand.
I am primarily the creator of a new code of morality, which has so far been believed impossible, namely, a morality not based on faith, not on emotion, not on arbitrary edict, but on reason. Morality which can be proved by means of logic.
And while it may not seem logical, presidential candidate Ron Paul, who subscribes to libertarianism, a political philosophy inspired by objectivism, is still winning primary votes. 16% in Pennsylvania, 8% this week in both North Carolina and Indiana, and his brand new book on the campaign is a bestseller. His fans admire both his ideas and his unwillingness to pander.
If you want my work, you must take it as it is or not at all.
Do you wish to defy our common standards?
I set my own standards.
Do you intend to fight against the whole world?
If necessary.
No, that's not Ron Paul. That's Gary Cooper playing Howard Rourke, the tall, angular architect of tall, angular buildings in The Fountainhead. That book has sold something like 6 million copies since it was published in 1943. Ron Paul should be so lucky. Rand died in 1982, but Rand lives.
Let's put it this way. Ayn Rand's work, I think, is popular for the same reason Prometheus has always been popular with humans. It's about somebody who dares to struggle against great odds and, you know, steals fire.
Nick Gillespie is the editor of Reason.com and Reason TV and former editor of Reason Magazine, a libertarian journal whose name is a nod to Rand's favorite word. Reason above all. Reason above conventional pieties, reason above religion, above especially collectivist societies and command economies, the horrors of which she witnessed as a child in St. Petersburg during the Russian Revolution. Reason that finds its purest expression in capitalism.
Virtually every CEO of every major company will list Ayn Rand as a major influence. A bevy of Hollywood stars ranging from Brad Pitt to Angelina Jolie to Vince Vaughn, a director like Oliver Stone, who is fond of Castro, says that Ayn Rand is one of the most important figures in his intellectual life. Martina Navratilova, Billie Jean King, Hugh Hefner. I mean, the reach of this author is pretty astonishing.
And I don't think that influence derives from her persuasive argument against command economies.
She gives egoists a positive case for why the world should revolve around them and around their efforts. If you are the person who is creating value, if you are the star, the sun really does revolve around you. And not only should it be that way, but that's the moral order of the universe.
Ayn Rand's philosophy was fundamentally selfish. Respond.
Ayn Rand's philosophy is fundamentally reality-oriented.
Jeffrey Britting is the archivist of the Ayn Rand Institute and associate producer of the documentary Ayn Rand, A Sense of Life.
Human beings live their own life. Human beings implement their own thinking. They pursue their own happiness. That's ultimately a very selfish act. And that's a virtue, in her opinion.
Ayn Rand thinks that people who raise money for other people or provide services for other people in an organized way are weak and deluded.
Absolutely not. That is a flat-out distortion of Ayn Rand from A to Z. And if you wish to see the evidence for that, please consult her novels and please consult her views on charity and please consult her views on scholarships and please consult her views on friendship and gift giving and Christmas and good cheer.
You don't like altruists.
I disapprove of them. I regard them as evil.
Phil Donahue interviewed Rand in 1980.
What's bad about the person who wants to help other people?
Well, to begin with, that's the big mistake. People can want to help other people properly and with very good reasons, but that isn't altruism. Altruism doesn't mean merely helping people. It means sacrificing yourself to others, placing the interests of others above your own. It's the self-sacrificing person who is an altruist.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with committing suicide? What's wrong with giving up life? And why is the happiness of another person important and good, but not your own?
Although she professed to live this life of reason, she herself lived a life of turbulent unreason.
Algis Valunas is contributing editor at The New Atlantis.
She had an affair when she was 49 with an acolyte of hers, a married man who was 25 years younger than she. She expected her husband and his wife to simply accept this affair as the perfectly reasonable thing to do. And for 12 years, they spent a couple of afternoons in her bedroom each week while slowly her lover's marriage dissolved and her husband became a virtual alcoholic. And when she was 61, her lover, Nathaniel Brandon, dumped her for a younger woman and she went crazy. All this vaunted reason of hers went right out the window.
Her lover's act, though cold, was perfectly rational.
She thought that if individuals wished to show compassion, they could do so, but they were under no obligation to do so. And for the most part, she looked on compassion as something morally slovenly, a concession that the strong made to the weak at the expense of their own excellence. She writes about compassion in The Fountainhead as what you feel when you see a caterpillar squashed.
Self-sacrifice, we drool, is the ultimate virtue. Let's stop and think. Can a man sacrifice his integrity, his rights, his freedom, his convictions, the honesty of his feeling, the independence of his thought? These are a man's supreme possessions. It is the unsacrificed self that we must respect in man above all. And where do we find it? In a man like Howard Roark.
It is the unsacrificed self that we must respect in man, but not perhaps in woman.
At the center of The Fountainhead is a scene of what can only be called consensual rape, in which Dominique Francone, the heroine, who is this masterful woman, but a virginal one, is overcome by Howard Roark in a scene of great passionate savagery.
She describes it as the act of a master taking shameful, contemptuous possession of her was the kind of rapture she had always wanted.
Writer Amy Benfer.
I think one of the big problems one runs into quite early, if you're a woman reading an Ayn Rand novel, is that she sort of paradoxically believed that a woman's place was to find a hero and worship him.
But as a kid, Amy Benfer slid past that part and briefly became an objectivist. She wrote a piece for In Character called Randy Girls, Adolescent Teenage Girls Love Ayn Rand. Wonder why?
Like in fairy tales, there are very few mothers in these stories. Almost nobody has a mother. Also, none of her characters have children. The female characters are extremely unencumbered by domestic responsibilities. And I also think the core idea of selfishness is sort of liberating to a teenage girl who is told that her noblest goal in life is to take care of other people.
In fact, that reminds me of a scene from The Simpsons where Marge brings little Maggie into the Ayn Rand School for Tots.
Maggie likes a bottle of warm milk before nap time.
A bottle? Mrs. Simpson, do you know what a baby's saying when she reaches for a bottle?
Baba?
She's saying, I am a leech. Our aim here is to develop the bottle within.
As research for her piece, Benfer wrote to book editors she knew trolling for opinions about Rand.
One book editor wrote back to me and said, I avoided reading Ayn Rand until I was 22. And after I finished The Fountainhead, I felt I had discovered something very important. Never date a boy who is reading The Fountainhead. Another reply I received pointed me to a fake blurb on the back of John Stewart's recent book, America, the Book, attributed falsely, of course, to Ayn Rand. And it reads, "This book is similar to my works in that anyone who reads it is sure to become an asshole for at least a month afterwards."
Nick Gillespie of Reason says he was never wowed by Rand's novels, but that the attacks on them are often swipes by people who would rather not seriously engage her ideas.
How many characters from Saul Bellow novels, how many characters from Don DeLillo novels, inarguably great writers, how many of them have penetrated the American cultural consciousness in the way that a Howard Roark or a John Galt has, to a degree where these are shorthands for an entire system of ideas? I think that that speaks pretty highly of her power as a writer. She is a great author because she has a phenomenal audience, including a lot of people who go through a worshipful phase with her. And, you know, here we could be talking about Alan Greenspan, the former head of the Federal Reserve, as well as any number of pimply-faced adolescents who decide to grow beyond her.
She put the individual front and center in life and in death. Here she is 2 years before she died.
What I always thought was a sentence from some Greek philosopher. I don't unfortunately remember who it was, that I read at 16, and it's affected me all my life. I will not die. It's the world that will end. And that's absolutely true. And, you know, for me now, it should be a serious question, because my time is fairly limited, and I have the same feeling that I will enjoy life to the last moment, and when it's the end, I don't have to worry about it. I'm not there. It's too bad that the world will end, and I think a very wonderful world will end with me.
There's a lot to be said for the consolation of philosophy.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Megan Ryan, Jamie York, Mike Volo, Mark Phillips, Nazanin Rafsanjani, Alan Smith, and Nadia Zonis, and edited by Brooke. We had technical direction from Jennifer Munson and more engineering help from Jason Isaac and Zach Marsh. We also had help from Sasha Evans and Andy Lancet. Our webmaster is Amy Pearl.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer and John Keefe our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. You can listen to the program and find free transcripts, MP3 downloads, and our podcast at onthemedia.org. You can also post comments there and email us at onthemedia@wnyc.org. This is On the Media from WNYC. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media is provided by the Bidell Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the John and Anna Maria Phillips Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC. This is NPR.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.